do have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So we do have a quorum. We'll go ahead and open the City of Gunnison Planning and Zoning Commission meeting for Wednesday, October 14th, 2020. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Good evening, everybody. Welcome.
Evening.
Unscheduled citizens, I'm assuming everybody's here for one of our agenda items. Yeah.
I'm Chris Francis.
Okay. So at this time, we'll open the public hearing and possible action for conditional use application CU 20-7, submitted by Christopher Francis for the multifamily residential at 106 South 11th Street within the commercial zone district. And we have proof of publication?
Yes, we do.
And review of the process, Andy?
You bet. The Land Development Code Section 2.6 states that multifamily residential use requires a conditional use permit within the commercial zone district. Conditional use applications are reviewed by the Planning and Zoning Commission at a public hearing after 15 days public notice. The commission may approve, deny, or remand the application back to the applicant. The applicant is Christopher Francis. He's requesting some office space of 500 square feet with 3 residential units within the commercial zone district. The legal description of the property is lots 3 through 4, block 24, West Gunnison Addition, City and County of Gunnison, Colorado.
All right, thank you, Andy. Applicant presentation. Christopher, you want to just go over your project and what you're doing?
I sure can. So currently the building is being used as a veterinary clinic. And we went under contract with the stipulation that we would be able to get a conditional use permit. And then we're going to convert 2/3 of the building, or 3/4 of it rather, into residential and retain 500 square feet of it as office space on the west end. And that end of it is on the street. So it won't really take away any of the commercial benefits that that property has, because it's tucked behind the liquor store. You can't see the rest of the building anyway. We would want to keep the signage, which is currently on the north side of the building, kind of right up next to the parking lot of the liquor store. And then that 500 square feet, more or less, would be used for small office space. We would put 2 one-bedroom apartments behind it, and then 1 two-bedroom apartment at the east end of the building. We've configured it with 6 parking spaces. And I did the calculations wrong and thought we needed at least 6, but I found out we really only need 4. So we're probably going to eliminate one of those to put more space for snow storage. There is snow storage noted on this particular diagram that's on the screen right now. And there was a question from somebody regarding the electrical. We do not want to put separate meters on each one of the units. We want to rent it fully. We want to rent it including utilities so that we don't have the expense of doing that. And in addition to that, it's got a in-floor heating system, and it's a very efficient heating system, and I don't want to disrupt it or have the expense of having to put in separate heating systems throughout the building. We'll be able to do this a little bit more cost-effectively if we don't have to do that. We have another property in Pueblo, and we did the same thing. It's an older, it's a convent actually, and we converted it into a triplex. And we just rent those units, including the utilities, and it works out really well. And I guess that's about it. If you have any questions for me, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay, any questions for the applicants?
No.
Jeffrey Taylor, any questions?
Where are the entrances to these units?
Okay, there is another diagram. It's got A, B, C, and D on it. If you can pull that down on the screen, it's in here somewhere.
Sorry if I'm making you dizzy. Yeah.
Page 2, I think.
Might be at the top.
A, B, C, and D.
Okay.
Because I know the building well. My dog knows it even better.
Oh,
she's been in all parts of it. I haven't been in all of it, but she has. Oh, I see. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so if you see the office, the one entrance for the office is going to be in the front.
Mm-hmm.
And then the dark line behind that, it looks like kind of a jagged line. That's the division between the office and the first apartment.
Mm-hmm.
In that section, there are two tall windows, and we're going to keep one window and turn the other window into a door. Then if you go down to the next unit, there is an existing doorway. We're keeping that existing doorway. And then if you go down to the last unit, there is an existing doorway facing west, and we're keeping that doorway as well.
There you go. Good.
Most of the interior walls are staying, and we're adding some, or there are some interior walls staying, and we're adding others.
Good.
And this building has a ton of plumbing already in it. The electrical system is phase 3. I don't think we'll have to do a whole lot to modify for the apartments because of the type of electrical system that's already in it. We obviously have to do some modifications, but I don't think we'll have to do a lot.
Well, anyway, I'm pleased to see people creating small rentable spaces. Certainly our Western University community really needs that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we think so too. And we love Gunnison. So we want to be a part of it.
Okay, Jeffrey Orse. Any questions?
Yeah, thank you. I'm curious, do we know what kind of business is going in that office, or is that open for rent?
It is open for whoever wants to move in there. It's not going to be anything other than light office, like maybe an insurance office or a small real estate office or an attorney if they need a place to
bookkeeper
or an art studio or something like that. It'll be relatively affordable and it'll be very affordable. And we're not going to put anybody in there that's wanting to do any manufacturing of marijuana or anything like that.
Cool. And it's not the vet shrinking. So thank you.
Oh, and it's not the vet shrinking either.
Yeah.
We may put our own little office in there. We just don't know for sure yet. We'd love to turn it into an apartment, but we don't want to go through the headache of converting the entire building into residential. So we're just
going
to leave it as office space and use the mixed use, which I think would be, from what my research was, would be easier to get the city to agree with.
I see. Thank you for answering that question. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, we don't have any other public
Travis is on.
Oh, yeah, Travis.
Travis. Okay, sorry about that. Travis, do you have any questions? Sorry, didn't see you jump in there.
Yeah, no worries. One question. Will you have to pay tap fees and put in separate water meters for each unit, or do you know how that's going to work?
I don't, to be honest with you, I don't know. If that's required, we will. But again, we're going to include the utilities in all of them. I think the water line that's in there is pretty thick, and I know that there's adequate sewage lines, but there is the possibility that we will have to increase the size of the water line to accommodate all of the additional kitchens and bathrooms. And if we do have to do that, we will work with the water department and get it done.
Okay.
And Andy's got some data on that.
Yeah, so we did have a preliminary meeting with the public works staff and looked at this site plan, and they did state that there would have to be an upgrade to the water line. It will require a sprinkler system as well, and possibly an upgrade to the sewer system. In regard to the meters, it can be on one meter since it has one mechanical room for the whole site, essentially. So that wasn't an issue. And since they're going to be all rentals, they're not going to be individually sold. So they can all operate under that one meter.
Kind of like the building where my store is in that. Our rent includes water, yeah, electricity, and all
that.
That's right. So. Okay.
And that's the only question I had.
Okay, thanks, Travis. Do we have any written or electronic correspondence?
You did
in
not
regards?
Receive anything on this.
Okay.
I've got one question.
Yeah.
And maybe it's for staff. Will the office need to be sprinklered too?
The whole building will need to be sprinkled.
Okay.
Yeah. We've reached out to a guy local that does do those retrofits. And whatever is required on that, we knew that before we put the offer in, and we'll do the sprinkler system throughout the whole building.
And something I forgot to mention too before we kicked off the public meeting, and that because we're kind of a mixture of here in the council chambers and online, please use the raise hand feature and that for the Zoom meeting. And then we'll get you unmuted and stuff so you can speak. Or you can use the chat feature too. Andy's monitoring that. So
yeah, we had Eric comment in the chat that he has some questions.
Okay, Eric.
Let me stop sharing my screen. I think that, there we go.
All right, and what's Eric got there?
So he says he has some questions. Let me, there you go, Eric. Now you should be able to unmute yourself.
Okay, now you can hear me?
Yes,
yes, you're on.
Hi, Eric. I can't see the diagram.
Let me pull it back up.
Okay.
Let me go to the, I think,
yeah,
I don't know what you're going to say
picture.
Is maybe.
Yeah, that one.
For the parking and stuff.
Yeah. My concern, we have the storage units next door, and I'm not opposed to having the residential there. My concern is that there isn't adequate space for the parking the way it's laid out without them coming onto our property. So if I were to fence the boundaries of our property, I'm not sure how they would navigate through their parking. Snow storage is kind of in the back. And if you're using that for parking, it's very difficult to get your snow there. So my main concerns are parking and snow storage. There really isn't much street parking there. I think they may be able to put a curb cut in front of the building and access it perpendicular. But it's fairly limited, and when there's snow in there, it's hard to get cleaned up.
Well, if you look at the diagram, that one, we've got parking, and this is how it was originally laid out. That's how that building's parking was approved when it was first built. The only thing that we've changed is we added one extra parking space in the back.
Yeah.
And we're going to eliminate one of those. I said that earlier in the meeting. I thought we needed six, but we don't. We only need four. So we're going to eliminate one or two of those. So it makes it easier to get the snow back into that area on the northeast of the parking lot. And it is a one-way road, which was originally approved. So they would come in off 11th. And they would have to go out through the alley, either right or left. I'm not sure if that's a one-way alley. I drove through that today. I don't see that it would be a problem. And today there were even people that were parked with the car facing the building and the back end of the car facing your property. And there was still plenty of room to maneuver. We wouldn't do it that way because we don't want our tenants being on your property. But there's still 12 feet from the end of the extension of that back building to the property line. So there would be adequate space for them to parallel park and get out.
As far as the snow movement, which the cars are an obstruction to that, the biggest difference between the way it operates today and the way it'll operate as residential is that 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning, instead of that being an empty parking lot that's easy to navigate when you're plowing the snow, it's going to be full of cars. So, you know, like I say, it's not a problem for me, because if it becomes one, I just put a chain link fence down the property line and, you know, call it good. I'm just letting you know that I see that as a potential problem.
Well, we could also eliminate two of those back parking spaces. Since we only need four on property and there's two on the street, if somebody wanted to park on the street, there's enough room out there for two. We would have no problem eliminating two of those back parking spaces to make more room for somebody to move the snow around. And we would have to let the tenants know, we could add that to the lease, that they would have to be conscious of snow removal. And when asked, they would have to move their vehicles.
Well, like I say, you'll move it from your spot. I don't want to be the one knocking on their door saying, move your cars.
Where do you put your snow currently?
I put it in that front island for the most part.
I see, where the trees are.
Well, where?
In this diagram anyway.
I'm looking, yes, exactly.
Okay. In the winter, we could do the same thing. We'll work with you however it's going to make it easier for everybody. We certainly do not want to be a bad neighbor, and we want to make sure that we're cooperating in whatever way has to be done to make sure that the snow is out of the way, doesn't create a problem for you. And if we need to store some of it in the front, there's not a problem with it, because there's 24 feet from the sidewalk in front of the office building to the street, and none of that's being used for parking currently. So we could.
I just want to add, we don't typically allow snow storage within the city right of way. So the snow storage does need to be on your property.
Okay.
Because we're already plowing the streets into that city right of way. Yeah. So.
Okay. And we really don't have any problem with the, with as far as the square footage goes, getting the snow back in that area. And I'm fine with eliminating two of those parking spaces to make the maneuverability easier.
Okay.
We have Dr. Jacobson has their hand up.
All right, Dr. Jacobson. Are you there? Dr. Jacobson?
Should be able to.
Yeah, it looks like he's unmuted.
Yeah.
Dr. Jacobson, you could also type your question into the chat and we could read it out for you if your mic's not working.
Dr. Jacobson, you there?
Coming through.
Okay. I see Eric Iverson's on now. Eric, did you have any questions for the applicant?
Not at this moment.
Okay.
Sorry, I got a new phone today.
did it come with instructions?
I got it all figured out now. Thank you.
All righty. All right.
I apologize.
No worries.
Hi, Eric.
This time we'll do the staff presentation.
Sure. I will just add that if this is approved tonight, that they will still, the applicants will still need to go through the building permit process, which will include the site development review. And so these items such as the parking, off-street parking, snow storage, all of that will be reviewed at the building permit level as well.
Okay. Commission discussion for the commissioners. Anybody have any other questions for staff or the applicants?
Oh, and we do, I received a, she put it under the question and
answer. Oh, okay.
It says, in my 18 years of ownership, we have had zero problems with snow clearance, even with the kennel staff there at 6 p.m. to 8 a.m.
Oh, that's good. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so for the commissioners, any other questions for the applicants or staff?
No. Greg, I have just one question.
Yeah, Travis.
I guess this is for staff. Is the zoning for this property the same as the one across the street that we recently approved for residential?
Yes.
Or is the zoning different?
No, it's commercial.
Same zone district.
Okay.
All right, nobody has anything else at this time. We'll close the public hearing and open it up for possible commission action.
Let's see, I have another.
Oh.
Okay, she just had a clarification, or Dr. Davidson, oh. Clarification, 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
I'll move that we vote to approve conditional use application CU 20-7 submitted by Christopher Francis for a change of use to mixed use office and multifamily residential on the lots 3-4 block 24 West Gunnison Edition with the following findings of facts and conditions as found in this evening's packet.
All right, do we have a second?
I'll second that.
All right, thank you, Jeffrey. All right, Andy, please poll the commission.
You bet. Larson?
Yes.
Taylor?
Oh, yes.
Sorry, I'm using your last names. Schieffer?
Yes.
Iverson?
Yes.
Oros?
Yes.
Talk?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Congratulations. Awesome. Christopher, congratulations. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. And I'm sure that we'll be talking. It's a small enough town. We'll get to know you at some point.
And I'm sure you'll get plenty of time with staff as you move forward with this.
Right on. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Have a great evening.
Thanks. You too.
All right. This time we'll open up public hearing and possible action for conditional use CU 20-8 submitted by A&B Holdings LLC for a retail marijuana establishment within the industrial zone district. And we have proof of publication?
Yes, we do.
All right. Review of the process.
Land Development Code Section 2.4, Principal Use Table, classifies a retail marijuana establishment as conditional, requiring a conditional use permit to operate in the industrial zone district. Conditional use applications are reviewed by the Planning and Zoning Commission at a public hearing after 15 days public notice. The commission may approve, deny, or remand the application back to the applicant. The applicant is A&B Holdings, LLC, represented by Amanda Calvert. She's requesting to add a retail marijuana establishment in an existing building that currently is a cultivation facility within the industrial zone district. The property is located at 800 West Rio Grande Avenue, Rio Grande Edition, City and County of Gunnison.
Okay, applicant presentation. Amanda, is she with us?
I don't see her on there as a panelist. If you ended up joining as an attendee, if you could raise your hand or do a chat.
Okay.
don't see her on there.
Okay. We don't have anybody else representing her.
I know the link was sent to two individuals regarding this application.
A little hard to move forward with it now without being
Mr.
able to ask questions.
Brian Stokak that raised his hand.
Brian, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Hello.
Hello.
There we go.
All right, there we are.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
So for the applicants, Nada, if you'd like to just kind of go over
can you hear me?
The project. Yes. If you'd like to go over your project here.
Hello.
And what you want to do. And
can you hear me?
Yes.
We can hear you.
Can you hear me?
You apparently hear
us. We can hear you. Let me put it in the chat.
Yeah. Check his volume control.
So I guess I can't hear you guys, but you can hear me now. I don't know what's happening right now, but anyhow, we have, if you can hear me, I'm looking at your voices, or at your faces. We have a cultivation facility currently right there. We have about 550 square feet in the front of it that is currently unused that we are hopefully planning on turning into a retail establishment. And that's pretty much, you know, the gist. Most of it is in the book right there. And this is pretty awkward where I can't hear anybody else. I'm going to try to sign back in real quick is what I'm going to do.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, sorry.
And will you say your name,
so Frank,
does
he want? This is Amanda Calvert, the business owner for ALK Holdings, Omgro. That's
okay.
At 800 West to Rio Grande Avenue. And I'll pretty much go off what Brian was saying. At the moment, we're distributing throughout the state, and we would like to distribute it locally. I've tried working with local stores, and they are unable to carry small plants, also known as clones. And I've had members of the community asking to exercise their right. So we do have a product to offer the community to prevent black market activity to get those plants or seeds. So we're kind of helping enable that and helping the community grow, essentially. And exercise their rights. So we have that product available. Also, we have local organic. Hang on one second. Brian's trying to call me. I'm on my iPhone right now. Sorry. Had some issues. My kids getting my computer wet. So we are both two local families, and we're just looking to grow our business locally first, and just being able to take it from the farm to the shelf. Just as the farmer, it's rough right now in the market in general, so it'd be great to just have a mainstream for our product, and our locals can consistently get the product and not you know, have to go to all the different dispensaries hoping to see it. We're hoping to put the dispensary in the front of the building. It's, as Brian said, about 520 feet, and we have parking. We have tons of parking. We have security at the moment and up-to-date camera system. It's a existing cultivation and MED licensed facility. So, pretty much just turning my office into a spot where we can provide product for the locals.
Okay. For the commissioners, any questions for the applicants? Jeffrey Oros? start with you.
I don't have any questions on this one at this time.
Okay, Travis?
I don't have any questions either.
All right, Jeffrey Taylor?
Just clarification, I think I understood this correctly. This is already a production facility. You're just adding a retail aspect to it?
Yes. So it's kind of like the idea of like a brewery where I'm hoping we could have some windows and people can see directly our organic product being cultivated and try to figure out a legal way for customers to see that, maybe charge for tours, increase tax revenue for you guys.
Sorry to ask one more question. So you're going to be operating a dispensary, is that right?
Currently we're operating the cultivation. I'm sorry, did I understand that question right?
No, so your question here is you're going to now become a dispensary, is that right?
Correct.
Yes, both. Yes, yeah. We want to add that license to our existing.
Are you carrying like a wide product range of like everything they make, or are you just going to focus on, I mean, it's not important really. I just was going to ask.
Actually, it's pretty interesting. I'm trying to carry all the products are going to be made from Omegrow. So we have existing relationships with local MIP license like Cosmic Kitchen and a few other local companies to hopefully get our product put in to extractions and concentrates. So essentially they're still from Omegrow and still locally made. And as well as Canna Punch and a few other larger distributing, they will exchange our Omegrow like trim is what it's called, trimmings. And they're going to make concentrates from our trimmings. And so it'll all be technically made from our flower and our trim. And it'll be put into kind of the products that are on the shelves at the other stores. So it'll be similar to the other stores, but it'll all be made from our product. Right.
So, I mean, again, this isn't such important questions. Just I thought I would ask them. Are you planning on sort of then profiling yourself as kind of like, you mentioned the word brewery, are you planning on profiling yourself kind of like that, like a local craft producer making local craft products?
Yes, essentially, yes. And we'll have plants too, which no one else carries. I've tried working with the dispensaries. It's really hard. They're just not set up and they don't have the knowledge to water the plants or keep them alive or to compliance as well. So but it's all the products I'm hoping to be crafted from Omegrow.
Thank you. That's all.
Okay. Yeah. Eric Iverson.
It says that your license for approval with the city and state is still pending. Is there any updates on that?
I have the hard copy in my possession. I got it in the mail last week. So okay. There's probably email chain with Cassie or Erica as well. Maybe they could update you guys. But I do have my local license for the cultivation.
But for the retail establishment, and is there any other different things you have to do when you're selling plants and, or as you said, clones?
So the clones, they have to be under 8 inches and it's from soil to the top of the plant. And we will make sure that that is compliant and they are individually labeled by strain and they will be sold at 6 per person. Just like the state's statute for cultivating at home. And it'd mostly be in the summer when the demand comes to us, because it's you have to throw them away if they go over, or, you know, put them in the trash with compliance. And so I'm up to date on all that. and we will train the bud tenders as well. And it will go into a container that's opaque. And it'll be just like buying edibles or any other product.
Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, Andy.
Just to add for clarification, she might have a conditional approval with the state. However, it's not gone before the city yet. And that public hearing should be happening before the end of the year. But they were kind of waiting for this conditional use, if it's approved, before they put that public hearing.
Okay. Andy, do you have any questions?
I have no questions at this time.
Okay. Yeah. Staff presentation, anything else to add?
I don't have anything else to add. Just, you know, if this conditional use approved, the city council approves it, there will be inspections by the building and fire marshal, building official and fire marshal, and make sure that all the requirements are met. They already have the ventilation system, cultivation. So a lot of those items that they have to have are already in place.
Okay. All right, any other comments or discussion from the commissioners? No? All right, this time, well, Jason. Oh, it's just that we'll go ahead and close the public hearing and open it up. Sorry.
I see Eric has his hand up. I'm not sure if he wants to say something.
Eric, did you have something else to add?
Eric, for sure.
Myself? No.
Or Eric for show, we see you have your hand up.
No, that was just trying to get them connected. When you couldn't get them, I was trying to call them to let them know. So that was some earlier.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Eric.
All right, so at this time we'll close the public hearing and open it up to possible commission action.
I'll move that we vote to approve conditional use application CU 20-8 submitted by A&B Holdings LLC for a retail marijuana establishment at 800 West Rio Grande Avenue within the industrial zone district based on the following findings of facts and conditions in this evening's packet.
All right, thank you. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All right, thank you, Travis. Andy, please poll the commission.
Oros?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Taylor?
Yes.
Iverson?
Yes.
Schieffer?
Yes.
Hawk?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All right, well, good luck on your conditional use and process through city council.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, have a good evening.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Moving on to the next item, and that is the continuing the discussion on the rezoning of a portion of the R1 zone district in the south part of town. As some of you may remember, we talked about reaching out to Public Works and finding out if there was even capacity to do this rezoning and to go and to support any extra density that would come from that. And it's on page 52 of your packet, there is the information from Public Works staff, in that they do not support additional density in this area due to concerns with the sewer main capacity that were identified in the 2018 sewer main data collection. Report is available if anybody wants it. Next thing I'd like to do is to thank everybody from that particular zone and those who live outside of it for your inputs. It was really enlightening. I think all of us learned a lot about how people feel about that. But at this point, I think it's probably best to just table this to some point in the future when the capacity exists to add extra density for that area. So anybody else have any other comments?
Just, I mean, I saw that and I wanted to ask again, there may not be an answer to this, but could that extra capacity possibly in future be coming to take into account the capacity of Gunnison Rising, the south side of Gunnison Rising? Could that happen?
It could. When that timing is unknown at this point.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch everything you said, Jeffrey. But with the Gunnison Rising build out, that would theoretically trigger the line to be updated and stuff at that time. So that would definitely be a time frame where it would be worth relooking at it.
There is the initial low flow that was presented to us by the engineer, correct?
Yes. It's about at capacity right now without even adding density.
Understood.
So we can assume that it's quite possible that if the south side of Gunnison Rising truly gets built, inevitably, there's going to be increased sewer capacity.
More than likely, yeah.
And it might be phased, so it may not be the first phase, but at some point, it definitely will be upgraded.
Yeah. Jeff Oros?
Yeah, I just heard Andy say that it's about at capacity right now. So would that bring any concern for Gunnison Rising itself?
Absolutely.
Leading into what Jeffrey Taylor is saying is that there is probably going to have to get replaced for Gunnison Rising.
Oh yeah, I think at some point here in the near future, and that's going to be inevitable as Gunnison Rising builds out or even starts building out. And that's one of the things that's going to have to be addressed right off the bat.
Yeah, because it sounds like there would be concern for that as well. Yeah,
that's right. And staff is working through those details right now. But when that line would be upgraded is unknown at this point.
Yeah.
But there is a plan for an alternative also, which wouldn't really satisfy this area, but it would solve the issues with Gunnison Rising, which is doing a lift system and tying into a different line that goes down to Rio Grande Avenue. So it would be tying into the same section. So there's some different options out there in the future that the staff is looking at right now. But when that time happens is completely unknown.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments?
I would just say this is a good thing to highlight in, we are looking at areas of potential growth or increasing density and running up against the fact that our infrastructure can't support it, which isn't good. this should be something, whether this, may not happen right now, but as far as, becoming a priority for the city and making sure that we actually have the infrastructure to handle growth that may come here, should, I guess, becomes more of a priority, I hope.
Yeah, and part of the issue with this specific area is it is our oldest part of town. It has the oldest lines, and it's essentially a choke point within the city that we don't have in other areas. So there's a lot happening that's adding into the situation in this location.
Do you have, so staff, do you have an idea, when they say this, the sewer main is at capacity, what area is that sewer line draining?
It's feeding everything north. So even across to Michi is coming down to that line.
Everything like northeast
North Colorado.
East of Main Street?
Yeah, so Colorado, the new residential developments that happened on Colorado added to this. It all kind of comes to the same choke point from clear up to the north down to this section. And I'm happy to share that report with you guys. Maybe I'll put it on our website. And if you guys want to look at that, I'm happy to do that.
Is there an English version that's not all engineering?
Maybe. There might be some good diagrams.
Could you email a link to us when you do that?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions or discussion on it?
I just as well like to thank all the citizens and everybody who weighed in on it. I think people brought up very good points for and against, and appreciate your engagement. Stay engaged.
Yeah. A lot of what we do doesn't generate much comment in that, so it is nice when the community does get involved and gives us their input. We appreciate it. All right, so at this time, we'll go ahead and move.
Before we move on, there's a question in the Q&A from Laurel Fisher. It says, good evening, commission members. Given the circumstances, do you have guidance on creating a system where a property owner could apply for a variance or a permit to construct an ADU in this neighborhood?
So the way the LDC is currently written, we don't have a process for requesting a variance or waiver to that section. So
I wanted to ask about the existing non-conforming properties and if there was anything that was considered something that we could do to help those guys with the issues that they have with their properties.
You know, I reached out to staff about a week ago and now with a couple of thoughts, and I'm not sure what all you guys came up with, but I'll turn it over to you and what you.
Yeah, just as far as having kind of a hybrid of standards for those.
Making some kind of an allowance where if they had an ADU on site and something happened to that ADU, or if they wanted to do an improvement to that ADU to make it more livable, if we could come up with a process for doing that. And part of the issue was because of the nonconformity, we don't really know where an existing ADU might be, because a lot of them have been done on the inside of a garage and from the outside still look like a garage, but they're being used as an ADU. So
and we do have one in this neighborhood that we're addressing.
Okay.
So they've been sent a couple letters, and further action will be taken if the situation's not remedied. As far as having like a allowance or something for ADUs, it's really hard because if we do that for just this area, it kind of applies across the whole city.
Right.
And so we do have one concern that I have is we have our non-conforming section of the code, which does allow these older, you know, non-conforming sites that have more than one residential unit on them. It just states in that section that if the property or the dwelling unit in this case is destroyed beyond 80%, then they need to comply with the land development code. We have these situations all over town, and sometimes we have the banks contacting us and requesting a zoning letter for clarification on that. And just simply that statement, this is what our code says, it's non-conforming, if it burns down, they need to comply, or destroyed, then that has resolved the situation as far as, you know, the banking world. But we do not have a variance in place to allow the additional dwelling units.
Okay. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yep.
All right. We have any other?
For clarification for me on that, we would have to rewrite our zoning descriptions to remove the ADU, like the non-allowance of ADUs for many of the zones? Is that, that's what you're saying?
No, so ADUs are allowed in all zone districts except the R1 zone.
Right.
So in certain areas throughout the city, we do have properties that are what we call non-conforming to the use, right? So they have, let's say it's an R1 zone district. They're only supposed to have one single family residence and they have two units on there, whether it's a duplex or whether it's a single family and ADU. We do not have anything in our codes, especially the historic ones, that state that we can do a variance. There is no variance process for that. It falls under a section of our code called non-conforming uses. And within there, it says that non-conforming use may continue. So it's kind of like you hear the term grandfathered in. So right. It's kind of the grandfathering in. However, if it's destroyed beyond 80%, whether it's fire or some other cause that it's destroyed, then they have to comply with the land development code, which means they could not rebuild that extra dwelling unit. Right. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I answered part of it. The other part of my question is, like, right now it's written into our codes that ADUs are not allowed in R1. Now, this, hypothetically, could that code be rewritten to allow ADUs?
That's what the rezoning would have done.
Just
so
my,
we would have rezoned
my understanding.
This, right. It would have allowed ADUs.
Yeah, so that's what that would have done. That's cool. I'm just pondering Laurel's question in my mind and thinking about other questions that might be out there. So thank you for that clarification.
You're welcome.
I have one other question.
Okay.
The sewer line is really concerning to me. I'm curious if that came into consideration when the new apartment buildings were allowed to go up on North Colorado in the R3 zones. Like, was that discussed during that time for those buildings as well? Because I see this pinch point as potentially being a hiccup for like other future developments in town if it's all north flowing or all properties north flow into this. So
yeah.
I'm caught up on it.
And Jeffrey,
yes. Go ahead.
There's also a similar comment in the Q&A from Julie Nelson. Says if the North Colorado Street future build is going to impact the sewer system, what does that mean for South Colorado and the surrounding areas? Isn't that going to be a problem? And that was part of the assessment of Public Works, is to make sure that that would not be a problem, that there is sufficient capacity for those North Colorado developments that are underway. And Andy, do you want
to? Yeah, I was just going to add to that. That was definitely looked at, and Cody Tusing, our city engineer, literally had it down to like the number of units that could be handled. And the two developments on Colorado Street were kind of the last of that capacity, essentially, before it really goes over the top as far as being too much for that line. So as Gunson Riping, like we already talked about, comes on, there's going to have to be a different solution.
Thank you for answering those questions for me and helping me understand a little. That's all I got.
Okay. Anybody have anything else?
We have one more chat.
Okay.
This is from Marty and Linda. My concern is that ADU will become large, 5 or more units. Is it limited to one family? So an ADU is size restricted between 300 square feet and 700 square feet. So I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Yeah, multi-unit ADUs would simply not be allowed in any ADU situation.
And on any site, you're only allowed one ADU.
Right.
So in all these other zone districts, you can only have one.
And so this wouldn't be a fiveplex or an apartment building. This would be a single ADU that would have been on that property.
Right.
Correct.
Any other questions?
Marty, yeah. I have one more thing, but there is an apartment at San Juan and Taylor. San Juan and Taylor.
If you bring up your zoning map, you'll be able to see which zone that's in.
And I'm going to allow you guys to talk, Marty, and if you, Marty and Linda, if you want to say something.
You can talk now. Okay. Fine.
Hello.
So is that apartment complex not in this area that you're talking about?
No, it is. It's right on the corner, the west, northwest corner of San Juan and
Wisconsin.
Taylor. And
here's Taylor.
There's at least five units in there. It's perpetually filthy. And in the process of people moving in and out, I mean, I would love it if you guys would take the time to drive by there tomorrow and see it. And to me, that is a major eyesore in the neighborhood. And, I already see that the guy over there on the corner, directly kitty corner to Bob Teitler's house, is building and removing.
And that's at Iowa.
Iowa. And
what's this next street here?
The 300. That might be Wisconsin.
The 300 block of South Iowa, they're building a new house. I don't know what's going up there.
And it was supposed to be just a garage, but now it's all of a sudden becoming, they're moving out a historic log cabin. I hope they're moving it somewhere. But man, it's moving fast. And this is the last
Chris Klein's place.
Chris, Rachel? Yes, it is. I think Chris Klein's place. Right
there. Wow. I'm very concerned about all this. He's built, put in more plumbing. He's moving a historical building, and this is the last remnant of historic, the first houses in town.
Well, I'm just worried that more apartment complexes are going to go up.
I do not want to see that.
I mean, if one's allowed one block south of me, does that mean one will be allowed on my block?
Well, right now, apartment complexes aren't allowed.
That's prohibited. We'll have to check
staff will look into this apartment complex on San Juan and Taylor.
I might suspect that's the house where they rent rooms.
Yeah, it could be.
Doesn't look like it. It's got multiple doors.
Okay. I'm so glad you'll look into it, because that's what I'm afraid this area will turn into.
Yeah. As we were saying earlier, Nat, because of the capacity for sewer and other utilities, nothing is going to change in there for the time being until those issues have been addressed at some point down the road. But
that gives me a lot of faith, because I just see this guy chopping in over there on Iowa and Wisconsin.
Not Wisconsin.
Wherever it is.
Gunnison, maybe. It's one block south of New York. But an additional family unit, the additional dwelling unit would have only one family, or maybe one person?
Designated by size.
So there's a comment in here from Eric Rochelle saying that is not an apartment complex. You can have five unrelated parties living in one home, which is true.
Good.
With our code. Jim Barr owns the apartment complex in parentheses. And if there are issues, they could complain to him.
Well, okay. From what I understand, this area is single family designation.
I believe it's Kim, not Jim. I'm just saying, I think it's Kim Bars, not Jim Barr.
Oh.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, she owns the house.
R1 zoning is a single family residence, but you're allowed up to 5 rooms. Unrelated people in there?
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. That was the issue.
Well, then how does that become a family?
It doesn't make sense at all.
I had 4 here.
Right, but that's not a family, 5 unrelated people.
No, it's not, and I understand where you're coming from. I said I dealt with it when I lived on North Pine Street in an R1.
Well, that's another thing I'd like for y'all to look into then, because, you know, it's like, this is the problem. I love that, you know, Gunnison doesn't have a lot of codes, but that can work for and against you.
And that would disallow 2 people who aren't of the same family living together. If you go by family as family.
Well, that's 2, but this is 5?
Well, maybe several generations, Marty. Got it.
Well, I have another question on that.
Yeah, there's a item in the Q&A from anonymous attendee. States, how long will you give these individuals who are not conforming to single family living regulations a chance to cease? As far as I know, it's been years. And I'm not sure if this is in reference to the grandfathered properties or a specific instance. Could you clarify your question?
And just for the Wisconsin property.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
We have been dealing with that. They were given an extension to November 7th to find an alternative house, essentially. So that is underway on that property.
Which property is that?
It's on Wisconsin.
Where on Wisconsin? Can you say?
I don't recall the exact address at this point, but I think it's in the 200 block.
But it is an instance where a non-permitted ADU was built, and they've been given a cease and desist notice for that.
Okay.
Brian Smith has another question in the Q&A. Given that North Colorado Housing Developments is to max out the sewer capacity for that area being discussed, and Gunnison Rising will fully exceed capacity, does the city have a timeline for increasing capacity? And the answer to that is essentially no. That will depend on the timeline for build out of Gunnison Rising and decisions made by the developer and the Public Works Department for adding infrastructure appropriate to support that development. So that could happen next year. It
could happen in 20 years.
Correct. So we do not have a specific timeline for that.
There's a comment from Barry Muscat. In defining family or related parties, cities should be cautious about conforming with fair housing regulations.
Agreed.
Thanks, Barry.
Okay. Do we have any other comments?
Any other questions or comments?
All right.
I thought Jeff Oros just flashed up with his hand raised. He might be muted. I don't know.
I was just going to say I looked up the definition of family, and one of the definitions is a group of people living together.
That narrows it down. Okay.
The third definition under the word, a group of people living together as a household. So it doesn't necessarily have to be same blood relative.
Right.
To fit the definition. I just wanted to point that out.
Another point that, you know, while we do lack the capacity for sewer, you know, enforcement has been another issue that has come up, brought up by a number of people during this process, which is valid. And, you know, as we continue to grow, I think that will continue to have to be addressed as well, so that we don't have these issues, which is like, both of these issues seem like they're challenges for the city and us citizens.
I'm going to agree with you, Andy. Enforcement is an issue already, and we're not growing even fast as we probably will start growing. And enforcement is not just an issue in that neighborhood.
I would agree.
I have my own issues in my neighborhood, so that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think we could probably find people in every neighborhood and that would agree with issues in their area and stuff. So, and the system really is a complaint-driven system. So if nobody reaches out to the city and that, then it definitely isn't going to get addressed. And, but I know sometimes you get enough 911 calls and that, things start happening too. So. All right, anything else on the R1 discussion? All right, we'll go ahead and move on to consideration of the September 23rd, 2020 meeting minutes.
I'll move that we approve the September 23rd, 2020 meeting minutes as drafted in this evening's packet.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All right, any changes or corrections? Andy?
Oros?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Taylor?
Yes.
Schieffer?
Yes.
Iverson?
Yes.
Talk?
Yes.
Motion carries.
All right. Council planning staff update. Anton?
A quick run through some of the projects on North Colorado that were already discussed are still moving right along. You know, working through some issues regarding piping of the ditch that is getting resolved. The Lazy K property is moving forward. SGM is doing some work with our public works department regarding some of the platting and infrastructure issues. Gunnison Rising, the government campus application, we'll be seeing more of. That'll also be some clarification of a lot of the infrastructure issues that we touched on today that are more specifically related to the Gunnison Rising development and, you know, possible earliest phase that we might see. Also regarding Gunnison Rising is a memorandum of agreement is being moved forward between the applicants, the University Foundation. It's not the university specifically, right?
It is both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it would be the Gunnison Rising applicant, the University Foundation, as well as the city regarding the plan for building Georgia Avenue as a major conduit, connecting that future development to Main Street. And also planning staff, we're working still quite a bit with the county on the COVID-19 long-term planning response. Big focus on that is looking at the seasonal change upcoming and how that's inevitably going to impact people who have been able to operate outdoors. But come winter, that's all going to change. And you know, we're doing our best to work with business groups as well as the multi-jurisdictional recovery planning team and the One Valley Leadership Council to find resolutions there.
Restrictions and open.
Right. Well, that's not our decision. So
not mine either.
as well, we're following the sort of disastrous storm that knocked out nearly 30% of Gunnison's electric. We're working on the review of the Gunnison County Natural Hazard Mitigation Plan, and that's something that entities with the county and the multi-jurisdictional leadership is looking to adopt, and that's something that will likely go to council at some point to formally adopt that plan.
Something I heard from several people in the aftermath of that storm is with the restrictions on the lodging, people who were without electricity for 48 hours were trying to get hotel rooms, and because only 50, they could only have 50%.
That was lifted that evening. Actually, and that's something okay. that we discussed.
It must have been after one of my employees called, because
you must have heard from someone earlier in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Just following that council meeting, we were all stationed at the incident command, and that was a specific issue that came up. And we contacted Joni Reynolds and requested that she temporarily lift that.
Yeah, maybe, that's something that can just be part of the checklist to do earlier in the early in the process. Yeah.
Well, and normally we wouldn't have a disaster within a disaster.
So, yeah.
Not having COVID present would be a lot more convenient for everybody.
Yes.
So, that being said, I think, all the different jurisdictions did a pretty great job of getting things back up and running in a timely manner. And it was a significant amount of work on everybody's part. But that being said, there's a kind of a formalized action plan that is being requested by the county that so many jurisdictions adopt at this point. Looks like we're frozen. Is that?
I see people moving.
Oh, it might just be my computer then. Okay, sorry.
I told you. It's a Mac.
I thought I bored everybody to death. So, it's a Mac. Okay, and that's what I had on my list for recording. Andy, do you have anything else that I've forgotten about?
I think you covered it.
Okay, great.
And as far as next meeting, which would be October 28th?
Yes, so we have our continued public hearing for the government campus that evening.
Oh, yes.
And nothing else, I believe, for that evening. As far as where we're on that subject, if we can,
okay.
For the November meeting, because our next regular meeting in November would be the 11th, which is Veterans Day. We have that day off. We could meet that night if you guys still want to, or another option is the 18th.
Well, and if we look at the 25th, Thanksgiving is the next day. So maybe what we ought to do is do a preliminary schedule of the 18th.
Okay.
And that, so if something comes up, they're not having to wait until December to have it addressed.
Sounds good.
And we don't interfere with the two holidays.
Okay. And then our December meeting would be the 9th. And we would just have one meeting in December.
Yeah, that sounds good then. Yeah. 23rd, people are going to be leaving town or mm-hmm. having family in or whatever. So
we need to excuse John.
Okay. All right. So at this time, I'd entertain a motion to excuse John Perusik from tonight's meeting.
I'll move to excuse John Perusik from tonight's Planning and Zoning Commission meeting.
All right. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All right. Andy?
Talk?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Taylor?
Yes.
Schieffer?
Yes.
Iverson?
Yes.
Oros?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thanks, Carrie. Commissioner comments. Jeff Oros. Anything?
Still caught up on this sewer line. You know, I live in Palisades neighborhood, which has terrible sewer lines as well. And I happen to live in R1M, which allows for ADUs. So that's what I've been thinking about ever since the sewer line got thrown in here. So I'm just still caught up on that. And I'm really concerned about everybody north of there backing up, because that is not fun, let me tell you.
No, it's not.
No. No. No, I got the turner on speed dial and nobody wants that, you know? So
yeah.
That's what I've been thinking about. And then to come back to my previous question, so we were looking about the rezoning and allowing ADUs in R1, like in entirety. That's kind of what I was leading into, is that like right now we were looking at just doing this one section of town and rezoning this one section of town from R1 to R1M. But it's just hypothetically, potentially, is there a possibility of ever rewriting the R1 verbiage and allowing ADUs everywhere in town?
Gonna get a lot of pushback.
Yeah.
People buying an R1 for a specific reason, and that would be a hard one to convince people that live in the R1 to support.
And we did explore that and have a lot of discussions on that as well.
Yeah.
So to do that, we would go through the same type of process. It would just, we'd be looking at a larger section.
Be looking at every R1, I say every, there's not that many of them, but yeah.
Yeah.
It would impact each R1 district.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's something I was hypothetically thinking about during tonight's meeting, really. Because part of it was like, oh, well, look at the lots, you know, in W Mountain. They're large enough lots to house a detached garage and, like, not really detract from the neighborhood. And there could potentially be other R1 areas that could be good. And so I was just thinking about that.
People buy that for a specific reason, so they can have that large lot and a single house and a big garage and not have a neighbor next right on top of them. So,
yeah, so that's what we learned from a lot of the comments.
If you want to have an ADU, every other section of town other than R1 is available to you. So,
right. So it's hypothetically,
yes,
down the road, it could happened with just a rewriting of not just but with a long process of public input, and then rewriting the code is what it would take. I just was, yeah, from understanding, I wanted to know what that would involve.
It would require rewriting the what's allowed in an R1 district.
It'd be what's called a text amendment to the land development code,
and we would maybe even be potentially getting rid of R1M, because it would be like,
not necessarily.
No,
I don't know. I'm just, yeah, just
the lot sizes are different, the setbacks are different. So those are the two main key differences between the R1 good. And the R1M.
Very good points. Cool. Yeah, that's what I've been thinking about lately.
All right, Travis.
Well, I think it's interesting that the sewer kind of came up as the stop for looking at that, because I do think there's other areas of town that also have sewer issues. I guess it's interesting in that somebody, you know, who comes forward to do a multifamily development that's big enough would probably cause the city to have to upgrade that. In certain areas, if the city's not proactively doing that and has plans to do it. So I guess that's a question for staff is, does the city have plans to upgrade any of the existing sewer within town, or do they just wait until it's at capacity or needs to be addressed?
Or breaks.
Going on.
We need millions of dollars.
Yeah. That's what I was about to say. I was thinking funds.
Yeah.
Funds are the biggest issue.
This turns into a, you know, you can't get blood from a stone sort of.
Oh, never mind. I saw the mute at first, but never mind. Oh. We're all on microphones in here.
Can everybody hear me? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, that's where it turns into, you know, you can't squeeze blood from a stone kind of response is we just simply don't have the money to, you know, reinstall a upsized trunk line to try to hopefully spur development. We're more in a reactive position, quite frankly, and that's not our preference per se. However, if and when a developer does come online and wants to do some higher density, more intensive development, it has to be a partnership with the city and the developer to upsize the utilities accordingly. And that's exactly what we're doing right now with Gunnison Rising and the applicant.
Yeah. And the applicant typically bears the brunt of that cost.
So within the Gunnison Rising development, they will be paying for all of the infrastructure. Right. The city takes it over. But when it ties into the existing system and we need to upgrade, that's where the problem comes in.
Yeah.
Because we don't have, you know, we have money that's going towards the sewer plant, which we just, you know, upgraded. But it's not like we have additional
But income. You got to get it there now.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, so really true. It's the existing city that is the issue.
Yeah.
And the capacity.
That's a great point. Is the
sewer maybe we need like a mm-hmm. we need like a 1% for open pipes. Like a
I'm sorry, Jeffrey, what was that?
I was just saying maybe we need a special tax, like 1% for open pipes, kind of like 1% for open space. It's voluntary. Businesses could like opt into it or whatnot. I'm all for it. I will do that. You know, like
I ain't paying any more taxes. I pay too many now.
This is not
be a sales tax.
We don't want to wait till it's backed up and it's like, you know, I think it's something that we should continue talking about addressing right now. And it's like, is that the only line, or are there other lines of concern?
Well, I'm sure there's other lines, especially in the older areas of town.
There's others, but from what Cody said, that's the worst right there in San Juan. It's the worst in the whole city. It's at its capacity more than any of the others.
It all funnels in right there.
Other places,
it all rolls downhill.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe we could make a pitch for water conservation.
Eric Iverson.
I got nothing. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Jeff Taylor.
I just wanted to pick up what Jeffrey Oros was saying, because I will admit right now, one of the main reasons I wanted to be on planning and zoning is I wanted to do something like what he said, which is essentially, and you know, I'll go out on a limb and say, this is my deeply held philosophical belief. This is not, you know, a small or lightly held opinion, is that we have to eliminate the R1, or I would like to see us eliminate the R1 in its particular features, such as the restrictions on the ADUs, as well as perhaps the minimum size of the lots. And I really believe philosophically in that. And although, you know, Greg makes a good point, you know, people bought into that, they thought they had that. Well, I mean, that's what these people were saying in just this little neighborhood. And we could expect it anyone else anywhere in any other R1 to also say that. And they have a point, but it's also a deeply philosophical point, which is, who owns Gunnison? Do the individual neighborhood owners own their neighborhood? Or do all the people of Gunnison own all the town of Gunnison? And if you read what the comments were, people from outside the zone were saying they support the ADUs. And that may be because there are more interests than simply the people who live in the neighborhood. And I'll stop there, but I just want to say that. And also, last point, the entire city of Minneapolis did away with essentially that kind of zoning. They did it for the entire city. So it's not unheard of at all to change the zoning. That's all I'm going to say.
Jeff, you and I will disagree to disagree. Because I'm the other way on it. But, I appreciate your viewpoint and that. But, yeah, I think that's one of those things you and I will probably just agree to disagree on, and we'll go from there. Andy?
I would say one of the things that I do see that we are tasked with doing is maintaining a diverse stock in housing. I see that as valuable for a community. I also am aware that places are allowing ADUs across the board in whole cities. Yep, I see those things. other than that, I've got nothing. This was a pretty good discussion. I was glad to see the community engagement. Hope we can bring it up again when we get our infrastructure updated.
All right, if we don't have anything else, we're adjourned.
Thanks, everyone.
Have a great evening.
If you haven't already.